The following is a presentation of the Matt Talk Podcast Network.
Welcome to On the Mat. I am Kyle Klingman of the National Wrestling Hall of Fame Dan Gable Museum. We are live from the Dan Gable Celebrity Golf Tournament at Prairie Links Golf and Event Center, as always, with Andy Hamilton, the pride of track wrestling. Proud as a peacock. You got your NBC Sports hat on. Looks good.
The power of the peacock.
I like that hat. You got to be proud for working for NBC Sports.
Absolutely.
That's a great thing to have. I mean, you got the biggest company in the world behind your product. Has to feel good.
It does feel good. Feels great, Kyle.
It should feel great.
Let's throw in the old Bart Scott interview.
If no one's seen that, you need to just take the time to go see the Bart Scott interview with Sal Palantonio, I think it is. Yeah. And maybe even type in remix in YouTube. It's well worth the time. Yeah. You showed it to me for the first time. I hadn't seen it. Now I've seen it probably conservatively 50 times. I've watched it because of you.
I would take the over on that. I think you and I have watched it 50 times together.
It's worth every second of it, and it's worth it to be on this podcast because we're going to have some great guests. We are in the wings with Brad Smith coming up. He was an NCAA champion for the University of Iowa in 1976. Just broke Bob Siddons' record of 11 state championships, traditional state team championships in the state of Iowa. He now has 12. That's the record now. Bob Siddons, the legend that coached Dan Gable all those years, coached at Waterloo West High School. It's going to be fun to catch up with Brad Smith and a multitude of other people at the Dan Gable Celebrity Golf Tournament. But you are seeing this from an outside perspective. You just see all the names coming in and out. We had a rain delay. It's pretty cool to see four-time state champions walking around, pro football players, Olympic gold medalists. Pretty special.
Yeah, and happy we got the chance to catch up with Brad. Brad was the first. I was City High when Brad Smith was there. That was my first assignment. That's how I got into wrestling. Covering wrestling was covering his state championship team in 1999. They won it without a state champion, which is almost unheard of now in the era of the super teams. They had one finalist, won it on the backside. I think it came down to the last match of the tournament. One of the Fulces brothers, who went on to wrestle for the Hawkeyes, they had to, one of the Fulces twins had to get, if I'm not mistaken, had to get a tech or a pin for Decorah to win and couldn't quite get it done. And so Iowa City High won by, I think, half a point. Yeah, Brad was great to deal with in that early years, and that's probably thanks to him. Part of the reason why I am where I am. I had such a good experience covering his team back then, and he made my job so easy back then. So hats off to Brad. Thanks so much. I'm grateful for all the things that he's done for my career.
Not only that, he coached four-time state champions.
Wow.
Let's go through that. Jeff McGinnis, Carter Happel, Morningstar,
and Light.
Light. Yep, you got it. So he coached four Iowa high school state wrestling champions. There's been 25, so he has an influence on a lot of those. And getting a chance to talk to him, it's neat that he is getting the Bob Siddons Iowa High School Wrestling Coach of the Year later this evening. So that's neat that you have that connection. 23 state championships between those two. That's a great achievement.
Yeah, absolutely. Kyle, tell us a little bit about, before I sidetrack you here, tell us a little bit about Hall of Fame weekend. What's going on this weekend here in the Cedar Valley? Who's in the Hall of Fame class? Fill the audience in on that a little bit.
Great class. We have Kevin Dresser, who's going to be coming up later tonight. Chris Bono is out golfing. Tony Davis, the most recent NCAA wrestling champion for the University of Northern Iowa, is going in, along with John Bowlesby, a guy that a lot of people may not know much about, but he made a senior world team directly out of high school at 220 pounds. So if that gives you any indication of how good he was, that that should show you how what kind of level he was straight out of high school. Bannocks are getting a family legacy award, and then Teske and Thompson, Brody Teske and Alex Thompson, getting the Bob Steenlage Iowa High School Wrestler of the Year. Really couldn't go one way or the other, so we had to make that decision that they were both going to get it. So that's a great class that we have. Bob Roethler was at Emmitsburg for all those years. He's also getting inducted into the Hall of Fame. So it's all great to have these guys here. Excited about that and excited to get Brad Smith on the line with us here now. our first guest, NCAA champion for the University of Iowa in 1975.
Six.
76. I got it wrong. I'm glad you corrected me. You should know that. And most importantly, you set the all-time record in Iowa for 12th traditional state wrestling championship as a team. Just broke Bob Siddons' record. Congratulations on that. You coach four-time state wrestling champions. You have a great piece of history. When you think about that in the scope of things, after all your coaching career, four-time state champions, 12 traditional state team championships, put that in perspective for us.
Well, you know, it's a great feeling to be in the same name with Bob Siddons. You know, he's a legend, and I've worked camps with him when he was, you know, back in the day and stuff, and learned a lot from him. But yeah, it's a great feeling to reach that goal as a coach, because you always have goals and you're always shooting for something. And I've had a lot of help over the years, so I've got some outstanding guys on my staff at Lisbon right now, and it's not just me. So we've just got a good base, a good foundation, and things have gone well lately for us.
You have Jeff McGinnis out here as one of the celebrities. He was one of your four-time state wrestling champions. Undefeated four-time state wrestling champion, went on to be a two-time NCAA wrestling champion for the University of Iowa. What separated him? How did he get so good?
No, he was already good before I got there. I came his junior year, and his junior and senior year, he was untouchable. Very, very good technically, and never got out of position. Always in great shape, and he was like a cat, always landing on his feet. He's just an exceptional. He's probably one of the best, you know, I've had the opportunity to coach.
Most recent was Carter Happel. He's at the University of Iowa right now. What kind of trend do you see with the entire Happel family? That's a big family, and that's going to be a big name in the sport. Is that an influence of the family that they have, that they got so good in wrestling?
Yeah, they're just following their brother's footsteps. Like, you know, Carter was a four-timer, obviously, and he's at Iowa right now. And then we got another one right behind him now, Kel Happel. And, you know, pound for pound, he's one of the toughest kids in the state of Iowa. And he'll be going for his third title next year. And, you know, I can't see anybody beating him, but, you know, he's got to keep working and go from there. And then we got Quincy coming up this year as a freshman. And Dean, the dad, and the mom, they're great wrestling people. And they take him everywhere, and you know, and to find out the best competition, and they've got where they are because of that.
You're from Illinois. You came to the University of Iowa. What brought you here? I think you might have been on the beginning end with Gary Kirtlemeyer, and then Gable took over. What was it about Iowa that brought you from your home state to this state?
Well, I wrestled junior nationals in Iowa City when I was in high school, my junior and senior year, and met Gable, met Kirtlemeyer, and I knew that was Gable's first year as a freshman with me coming in, and we got some real good recruits that year with Tim Szaski and Chuck Gaglin, some of those guys. So having Gable be in there and Kirtlemeyer was the major influence why I went to Iowa.
Brad, what are the biggest differences that you've noticed in high school wrestling now versus when you first got in?
I just think there's a lot more better clubs now, club wrestling. Guys have more opportunity to excel in the sport. And the good ones put the time in, you know, with Fargo and, you know, the freestyle and the Greco and just the club wrestling. There's a lot of good club coaches out there that aren't even high school wrestlers. Our coaches that do an outstanding job. Like, we got several kids over in Eastern Iowa from Lisbon, and you got Terry Brands over there, and Mike, you know, Matt McDonough was there, and this James Kelly. I mean, there's just so many good clubs now, and gives the kids opportunity to learn from better coaches.
Well, end with this. You are mentioned prominently in Dan Gable's book, his second book, about the 10-mile runs that he put you through, and that you had put out on a form that you didn't need motivation, that you didn't need that extra push, and he put you through these 10-mile runs. You won the NCAA championships your senior year because of those runs, according to the chapter. Take us through what that all did for you.
Well, you know, I was at a point in my career, you know, I thought I could have been, you know, two or three time All-American, and I come my senior year and I haven't placed, you know, in the top six. And so I needed something, and Gable, you know, how he is, he's the type of coach to figure out what each individual needs. And he figured out I just need a little bit more mental toughness. And those 10-mile runs gave me a little bit more mental toughness, I think. And I didn't realize I did it as many times as I did, but supposing his book, he said I did it like 6 times. So it got me, you know, over the hump. And, you know, I never ran more than 2 or 3 miles at a time. So when I did those 10-mile runs, it really helped my confidence.
Brad, thanks for joining us. Thanks for being part of the Dan Gable Celebrity Golf Tournament. Andy, we're going to bring in Mack Ryder in a couple minutes here. Mack Ryder, 3-time All-American for Minnesota, 4-time state wrestling champion. He's here as a celebrity at the Dan Gable Celebrity Golf Tournament. But we need to take a couple minutes to talk about Final X. Experimental stage right now for this new format. It is caused a lot of talk, a lot of conversation, but we get a chance to go to Lincoln, Nebraska and watch what's probably the most compelling of the three Final X's. You have world champions. You have Kyle Snyder there going against Kyven Gadsden. You have Imar going against Jordan Burroughs. You have James Green going against Jason Chamberlain. And then I think probably the one that everyone's curious about is Thomas Gilman going against the young star in Dayton Fix. And then the women's slate. It's going to be a lot of fun going there and seeing what this format's like after all of the conversation. I don't want to say controversy because I don't think it's necessarily that. I just think it sparked a lot of dialogue about what the correct format should be.
Absolutely. And you look at us as a wrestling community, we can't ever 100% agree on anything, can we?
We can't.
And so you knew that like this would be debated, something that's this big that changes things this much. And it will be interesting 2.5 weeks from now what the reception is when this thing's all over.
I think that's right, and I think we want to give it a chance. I think we want to see what the format is, and I'm excited about what the potential could be. I don't know if it's necessarily going to be able to work when it comes to being an Olympic trials year, an Olympic year when they have the Olympic trials. I think with timing, this probably worked because the World Championships are later in the year. I don't know the exact dates, but I think they're in October this year.
Yep.
So I think that it's going to be an interesting format and how this all plays out, but I think a lot of the matches are going to be pretty locked. I think a guy like Jordan Burroughs, as good as Imar is and his potential, I just see Jordan Burroughs at a different plane right now. I just don't even see that being competitive. I see a couple tech falls there. But you're still going to have a couple competitive matches along the way. Hey, Kyven Gadsden has shown that he can beat Kyle Snyder. He pinned him in the 2015 NCAA Championship Finals. Last time they wrestled, it was a couple tech falls. We're going to see if he can close the gap on that. Kyven Gadsden's living in Ames right now. It's close to home for him. So we'll see what he can do against Kyle Snyder, the star of our country right now in wrestling.
Yeah, I was thinking about it. Kyven Gadsden was out here last year playing golf.
Yeah.
Gable.
There's a reason he's not here today, because
right?
Tomorrow is Final X for him.
I remember talking to him out in the parking lot a year ago at this thing and saying he's got a big task ahead of him. I remember him talking about got to get ready for Kyle. What are your thoughts on Final X? What do you think? Do you think do you like it? Do you think it's something that's going to stick? I mean, you mentioned 2020 and the obstacles that are in place there when the Olympics are in late July. But what are your thoughts on it?
I think what I don't like or what concerns me is that the Rochester World Team Trials, you don't put all of these guys who are competing in that on a pedestal. You're just putting the guys that make the finals on a pedestal. So it seemed like you just took a step backwards at that World Team Trials event in Rochester. They're warming up on the sideline. It felt like a high school atmosphere. They didn't have the staging area. It just felt like a regression a little bit as far as how we're building up these stars. We're building up 2 stars in each weight class, unbelievably. We're putting those guys on this huge pedestal. But I think that these guys on the 3, 4, 5, 6, they're still NBA caliber. If you want to make comparisons, they're still the all pros. They're the elite of the elite. You want those guys to get the credit and the recognition. I know from my vantage point, Andy, and explaining this to at least 20 people, nobody gets it right away unless you followed it. I mean, we follow this every single day. It is next to impossible to explain the format where really, there's 5 different events to make this decision on who gets on the world team. You have U.S. Open, you have the World Team Trials in Rochester, and then you have the 3 Final X's. And then you have to try to explain, no, they're not all at one. There's different weight classes at each one. And like Bill Zadek says, it provides that challenge that the peaking and the training cycle. Yeah. You just have 2 weeks difference, and that is more difficult. Even though you have the regional training centers, I think that's going to be the difficult part. But I still want to give it a chance. I think this can be a really elite event. I think it's a unique concept. I just hope people come out and support it and give it a shot.
Well, we've talked before on this podcast about the struggle with drawing big crowds to international style wrestling in the United States. Why can't we, you know, why is it that the World Cup draws less than half as much as the Iowa State High School Finals? In, you know, the World Cup in Iowa City, which was really well attended for past compared to past World Cups. But that's, you know, there's just been that disconnect. The U.S. Open has never drawn a ton of people out there. I think years watching it being live streamed and there or even talking to people that were out there and people saying, yeah, there's 800, 1,000 people in the stands. And these are the superstars in our sport in the United States. They go from competing in front of crowds of 20,000 at the NCAA championships down to, you know, 1/10 of that at the Open, or you know, a fifth of that at the World Team Trials. So, yeah, I hope that this showcases international style wrestling for people that normally wouldn't get out and watch it. The people in State College in Bethlehem that might not have given it a shot before, or might not have gone across the country to watch it, that they get out and they support the world, you know, the guys that are competing, guys and girls that are competing for the world team. So that will be the key. I, you know, talking to some people that are the diehards, I've heard several people say, well, I would go if it was all in one spot, but it's not. You know, I would go to Bethlehem if it was all there, or State College if it was all there, or Lincoln if it was all there, but, you know, you're splitting it in thirds now. So I'm open-minded. I hope that it's a huge success. I don't know that necessarily will be, but this was a massive swing at it, right? I mean, it wasn't we're going to kind of try this, going to dip our toe in the water and see what happens here. It's three sites rather than, you know, just expanding it to say two. Or I like the fact that you're putting them all on a level playing field, so to speak, now where, you know, it's not somebody wrestling four or five matches in one day, getting ready, and then wrestling somebody else that's been sitting. We'll see. We'll see how this, you know, last year there were two guys that went through the challenge tournament that won, Thomas Gilman and Zane Rutherford. How many of them can pull that off this go around? How many people can go through Rochester and wind up making the team?
And to your point with the U23 World Team Trials, here's a great event with guys competing post-collegiately. You had Colin Moore in the finals, Tech Fall, Kyle Connell twice. Kyle Connell beat Colin Moore at the NCAA championships twice. That really wasn't vindication. That doesn't stop the storyline for next year if those guys ever wrestle again. And so with people that are watching it from the outside, those NCAA championship fans, they probably don't know that Kyle Connell got Tech Fault twice and got handled by Colin Moore at the U23 World Team Trials. That storyline's still going to carry on for ESPN next year. It's still going to be the same that, hey, he beat him twice in college and that it was a big upset at the NCAA championships. People will remember that. I just don't know that once that college season is over, a lot of these people, if they're fans of Ohio State or UNI or whatever college program, they kind of check out a little bit. And so your crowd diminishes a little bit and they don't follow the individuals as much. We are driven by teams, and the international style of wrestling is an individual type of mentality. Until it comes to the world championships, then it's Team USA.
Yeah, and I think the lack of a defined freestyle Greco season
absolutely
hurts a little bit too, and that's part of why Final X was formed. Now it's more of a defined season. You know, if it doesn't stick, then I think we lose that a little bit. But it's such, you know, and we've talked about this too. It's such a good product right now. There has to be a greater following. That, you know, the people that are not following it are missing out right now.
Do you think we can get to RTC versus RTCs where they compete against each other in a team format?
I hope so. I hope so. I think that's what's missing a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, to your point, and David Mercatani says this all the time, the phrase that he uses on weighing in when we talk about stuff like this, people root for the laundry. You know, they root for, you know, the the Hawkeyes in the black and gold singlet. The Cowboys wearing orange and black. Penn State with the navy blue singlets with the white belts around them. You know, that goes a long way. I think the College Allegiance goes a long, long way. And there are people that will, you know, the Penn State fans are always going to root for David Taylor. You know, the Iowa fans are always going to root for Thomas Gilman, so on and so forth. But it's not quite the same following.
That's a great point, because once a transfer goes to another school, they're now part of that school. They're no longer that individual. We like franchises, especially with you. You're a huge Yankees fan. You like the Yankees. It's not necessarily the individual. If Aaron Judge went somewhere else, do you think you'd like him as much?
Not as much. I mean, I don't know. It depends on what kind of circumstances he left the Yankees under. But, I mean, it...
You like the franchise.
Yeah, here's the thing. Like, David Cone was my favorite pitcher on the Yankees championship run, that era. When he went and he pitched for the Red Sox, I liked seeing him give up home runs.
Well, my point, exactly. You're a fan of the franchise. Let's bring in Mac Ryder here. Four-time state wrestling champion at Gilbertville Don Bosco. You share a piece of history with your brother. You are the only brothers to win four-time state wrestling championships, three-time All-American at the University of Minnesota. And everyone wants to know, how did you get to Minnesota after being in Iowa?
Oh, man. You asked for 5 minutes. That's a lot longer story than 5 minutes. Long story short, I just kind of, a little bit of me was worried. You know, I used to go down when I was in high school. I would go down and I would stay with Mark Ryland, former Iowa wrestler. He would let me stay at his place, and he would help train me all summer long. And it was just, he was such a help to my career. But when it came time to make my decision, a little part of me was kind of worried that if I went to Iowa, I may kind of end up doing something that the same thing I've done my whole life, a little bit. And I kind of wanted to challenge myself, I guess, so to speak. So that was part of it. Another part of it, to be completely honest, I flipped a coin. I was down in my room by myself, and I think, I took a quarter down and I flipped it, and in the air, I knew in my heart I wanted to come up Minnesota, and it did. And I called Jay and said, I'm coming to Minnesota, that right as soon as it came up heads. And I don't know. There was a lot more stuff that went into it, but that was most of it. There was just kind of, I wanted to do something a little different, I guess.
When I think of Mac Ryder, the first thing I think about is I think about Doug Ryder, who passed away a couple years ago from cancer. But I saw a guy that had just unbelievable drive, unbelievable determination. Encapsulate his legacy and what he meant to you.
I mean, that's, again, we don't have 5 minutes. Really, everything I think that, I'm a small portion of what he was as far as, if I had had the drive and the tenacity and just the stubbornness that he had, I probably would have gone a lot further in the sport, but, I just, everything he did in his life, he always, there's so many things I think about. Just, there was a time when he asked me to help build this fence. He had to go to work and I had to build this fence for, to keep the cows in. And I went out and, I didn't probably do the best job. And he came home and he looked at it and he's like, that's terrible. You're going to do it again tomorrow. If you're going to do a job, you're going to do it right. You're going to do it perfect. And it was just kind of everything he did in his life, he wanted to do perfect. He wanted to do it the right way. Cause if you're going to do it, might as well do it right. And, that encompassed everything from his faith to his marriage to my mom, to the way he raised us kids, to, the way he kind of tried to help build the Gilbertville community.
You wrestled for Jay Robinson, and he also coached at the University of Iowa. He was an assistant coach under Dan Gable. I may have asked you this, but I always ask the Minnesota wrestlers. Jay tries to downplay it that he didn't like, or he didn't dislike Iowa. He always said, Iowa's just another team. From everything I've seen, Jay hated Iowa. What did he say to you guys about Iowa when you were an athlete?
I don't know so that much that he hated it. He just, really respected it in a way that, He could act like it's just another team, but it never was. Like, he coached entirely different the week leading up to the Iowa duel. He coached entirely different going into Big Tens because he Iowa was going to be there. And I don't know, maybe I'm reading him wrong, but he always kind of felt like me that he wanted to prove to Iowa that, you know, he was a great coach, you know, that when he left, you know, obviously they, you know, he coached under Dan there for a couple years at Iowa and then went up to Minnesota. And, but I think he always kind of wanted to prove that he was just as good of a coach or so to speak. And he, as much as he wants to say it was just another team on the other side, it never was. He made it more than what anybody else did, I would say.
And it was interesting because I think at one point Jay said if he hadn't left Iowa, he would have loved to have just stayed as an assistant under Dan Gable. So that kind of blew me away that he had that thought and that that determination. Jay Robinson, a unique guy. How did he raise the level of our sport?
I mean, he's everything. And I mean, he took Minnesota from there was no real program while he was there, but like there wasn't really a program there. And he built, and it took a lot of years, and it took a lot of effort, and it took a lot of mistakes. And you know, he kind of refined his coaching style over the years, but more so than just Minnesota. I mean, the guy lives wrestling every single day that he's alive. I mean, everything he does, entire life revolves around wrestling and how to make the sport better, how to promote it better, how to market it better, how to get more people involved. Like, it's just, you know, it's a tireless effort that he constantly lives every day to try to even still, you know, like we talked about, he's still, you know, he's getting a little slower moving around now, but it hasn't changed the way he's tried to keep building the sport of wrestling.
Got a couple questions for you, Mac. First of all, what's your consummate Jay story?
Oh, man. Let's see. What's my best Jay story? If you know Jay always tries to argue with you no matter what, okay? Everything, no matter what, if he asks you a question and you give the exact word-for-word answer that he was looking for, he's going to tell you, no, that was wrong, and he's going to change his stance on it. So one time, my senior year, we were down at Oklahoma State. We wrestled Iowa on Friday, wrestled Oklahoma State on Saturday, and I had a tough weekend. I lost to Slayton on Friday and Coleman Scott on Saturday or Sunday. And we just stopped to eat somewhere at a restaurant before we went to the airport to fly home. And you know, I was kind of down or whatever. I was still, you know, upset with myself. Senior year wasn't going the way I'd planned. And it's just small talk was getting made. And somebody asked, like, what's your favorite dessert? And I kind of thought for a little bit. I was like, I like root beer floats. And Jay was like, no. And I was like, what do you mean, no? He's like, that doesn't count. Root beer float's not a dessert. I was like, why would it not be? It's ice cream. And so we got in this argument. We were like trying to debate whether it was. And he said, you know what? You find me any menu, you ever find me a menu that shows a root beer float under desserts. And I can't remember what he told me he would do. And so for the last like 10 years, I've sent him countless pictures where every time I find it, I'm like, look, Pruitt told you it was a dessert. You know? It's just kind of the way he was. He wanted every moment was a teaching moment. And if he agreed with you, well, then he didn't teach you anything. So he always tried to you know, kind of argue everything or make it a debate.
Interesting times for the Gophers right now. I mean, mm-hmm. We're so accustomed to seeing Minnesota in trophy contention, a step back last year, but new facility on the way, top-notch recruiting class on the way. What's the vibe surrounding Minnesota wrestling right now?
I would say it's kind of, I mean, it's optimistic. You know, everybody wants to believe that, you know, with Gable coming in, some of the other guys, and I think, you know, with everybody moving up in weights next year, maybe it's healthier. You know, obviously Mitch McKee, you know, he's a great freestyle wrestler, but his U23 performance, I mean, he beat Cade Brock, and yeah, he gutted him three times, but he took him down twice too. There's hope that we can get back where we should be. You know, the last five years have been pretty hard. You know, I'm not going to sugarcoat it. It sucked. And it's been tough, but I think everybody as a whole is pretty optimistic that the right people are in place to get the job done. And we got some extremely exciting guys coming in. And you know, I think we hope to be back.
Gilbertville, Iowa is the Odessa, Texas. It's the Friday Night Lights. I mean, you are the quintessential wrestling town in the United States. When you come back to Gilbertville, Iowa, what kind of response do you get from the community?
Oh, it's nothing but support. I mean, this place is amazing. You know, I live in Minneapolis, and I've stayed there since I graduated. But if I ever leave Minneapolis, there's only one place I'd ever go, and it's coming back to Gilbertville. I mean, it's home to me, and it's, you know, from an outside perspective, from a 10,000-foot point of view, it'd probably be a very weird place. But the people there and the community there has just raised me. It made me who I am, and then, you know, We grew up on a little farm 2.5 miles east of town, and that place holds a special place in my heart, I guess I'd say.
I'm going to let you get to your sandwich. You need to get about back out on the course. Thanks for joining us. That was Mac Ryder, 4-time state wrestling champion from Gilbertville, Don Bosco, 3-time All-American for Minnesota. We'll be back with more. Our next guest is the pride of Davidson, Michigan. His name is Brent Metcalf, 2-time NCAA wrestling champion, 3-time finalist for the University of Iowa. Now he's an assistant wrestling coach at Iowa State University. You getting used to that, to be in a Cyclone?
Yeah, I have. It's been a really good transition. The support has been amazing from obviously the wrestling community, but also just the administration. And we've got all the tools we need. Team is starting to make growth, and we're getting the ball rolling.
What's the difference in mentality between the programs? Everyone talks about how you guys are all Hawkeyes, but what are you trying to do different than what the University of Iowa might do?
I think just implement our style of, I wouldn't say a similar philosophy, but our style of that, right? So you hear the common words of domination and spreading the gap, you know, and not winning tight matches, that sort of philosophy. But kind of the way that we do it, which was probably different than what's going on over there, I would suppose. So from coaching style, I think a lot of that's led by Mike Zadek. He's probably a little bit more of a laid-back style. To compliment him, and something I've really learned is just being very adaptable to the different individuals that you have. And just, you know, there's guys with so many different areas of strengths, and just being able to use what they've got and build off of that. And I think so far we've done a pretty good job with what we have of just, you know, making the best wrestler out of that guy, that individual, and with his strengths.
You lost a couple guys to transfer. You lost Marcus Harrington, a guy that just said he didn't want to wrestle anymore. Did you know going in that that might happen, that guys might want to not necessarily adopt your philosophy and go elsewhere?
I think that that would be expected. When you've got a program that is, what I think it was 65th in the country or something, it was at the bottom, that you would expect that there would be some turnover, there would be some guys that weren't going to fit. You know, each one of those cases was all different in its own way, but just in general, to generalize it all, you know, you come in with a new philosophy, you come in with maybe a new lifestyle for these guys, maybe new expectations, and to varying degrees, I think a number of them just decided that they weren't maybe on that same course. So some of them wanted to quit and be done with wrestling completely. That was a lot of the guys. And some of them just wanted maybe a different coach or different style, which is completely fine. We wish all those guys the best. So really, that's what it was really all about, was kind of saying, hey, guys, this is the new level that we're going to be at, and it's at the highest level, and this is what it's going to take to get us there. So if you want to do these things or you want to file in line, you know, this is the path. Let's all jump on it together. And a number of guys just, I don't think we're willing to do that. So that's kind of where you get that turnover, and that's good. It's good for the program. That room is a much different room now than it was a year ago. It's an exciting room. It's a room with a lot of flurries and a lot of points being scored. Just the energy's higher because everyone's on the same page and everyone's working toward the same goal.
You're used to winning. You're used to dominating. That's how you competed. That's what you were when you were coaching at the University of Iowa and part of that program on international teams. What was it like to maybe take 10, 20 steps back and just know that this is all a rebuilding phase?
It's definitely been different for me. I would say that Coach Dresser obviously has been through it a number of different times. Probably, I think Derek had some experience when he was at North Dakota State with just lower level team, so that was an adjustment for me for sure. Not that the expectation lowers for that you have for the guys, but just kind of changing maybe the way you coach guys and the way you work with guys, because you're gonna have to build a guy up. You can't take them from, let's say, 5 and say, hey, you need to be at 100 tomorrow. You know, so there's got to be some slower growth there, and so it's been really good for me to just kind of learn and have to maybe adapt my coaching style or the way that I think that wrestlers can build and grow in the sport. So it's been maybe a growing year for me individually.
One of your guys, Austin Gomez, heading off to Slovakia in September, Junior World Championships. Mm-hmm. What has impressed you in the year that you've spent around him?
That's a big deal. It's a big deal for him. It's a big deal for our program that he made that world team. Really, for him, it was expected because it was kind of payback after last year, and he kind of got cut short there. But he has been just an awesome leader to our team, obviously to us, and the change that's going on. He's a great example. He is someone that every day in the room, whether it's 6 a.m. when no one's in there, or when it's 3:30 when the whole team's together, that you could point to and you can say, hey, this guy's doing the right stuff. He's doing it the right way. As far as his training, as far as the way he competes, just his mentality, you know, put aside his style of wrestling, right? But just the how important the sport of wrestling is to him and how important being successful is, it's something that has started to bleed into our program. And just hope that you continue to, that he will, and then you continue to add some of these younger guys that we're bringing in that are going to be of the same mentality, and hopefully that ball just keeps rolling and it's going good.
Brent, thanks for coming on the program, on the mat. We enjoyed that. Thanks for being at the Dan Gable Celebrity Golf Tournament, and we hope we get you back year in and year out.
Yeah, thank you. Appreciate it.
Andy, our next guest, we debated on whether we should have him on the show. We weren't sure that being a three-time NCAA champion, four-time finalist, Olympic gold medalist was good enough to be on this show, but we went ahead with it anyway. His name's Ed Bannick. He wrestled at the University of Iowa under Dan Gable, and then went on to, as we said, win the 1984 Olympics. Also known for some of the world's worst jokes, or really good jokes, however you want to do it. Just give us maybe a couple of your diamonds in the rough.
All right, do you know how to throw a party in outer space? You plan it.
Okay,
that's one. Next one is, okay, in the Jamaican Islands, if you buy a slice of pie, apple pie, it's $2.50. But if you go to the Bahama Islands, it's $3. You know what you call that? The Pirates of the Caribbean.
You got a couple right there. Our On the Mat listeners are going to be very excited about those jokes. Now, no joking, because it's truly something that Randy Lewis takes pride in. Are you better than Randy Lewis as a University of Iowa Hawkeye?
How am I supposed to answer that?
Honestly?
Well, how are you going to determine better? Is it by record? Is it by tournaments won? So on. All I can say is when I was a high school senior, I looked up to Randy Lewis, and I saw him wrestling while in high school in, like, the Omaha Open and winning and doing some incredible things. And so it was... I look forward to when I made the commitment to Iowa to be a teammate of Randy Lewis, Bruce Kenseth, and Mark Trezino, and Scott Trezino, and all those guys. It was fun. It was really looking forward to wonderful times.
You are getting the Family Legacy Award at the Glen Brand Wrestling Hall of Fame of Iowa. Of course, we're here at the Dan Gable Celebrity Golf Tournament. Family is very important to you. That's why you wrote a book. Tell us about the book you're writing and how we can order the book.
The book is called Uncommon Bonds. My brothers Lou and Steve and I were talking about, you know, how you don't know until you lived your life if it was normal or not. I don't think anybody has a normal life, but we got to thinking back, well, we really didn't have a normal life. We were adopted early on because of a fire in our home. We come from a family of 14 biological siblings, and so we had a rocky start. My mom was German, my dad was Polish, and they went through World War II, and there's a whole story in the book talks about that. But then as we look back, we each of us said the same thing. We saw how so many people went out of the way to help us. Now it's our turn to help them, and that's one of the reasons why we wrote the book, to be inspirational. You can go to BannockPower3.com, and you can order the book there. We're selling them here today at the golf tournament, so it's not just about wrestling. My brother Steve's a retired military officer, a Fulbright colonel, and he does a lot of leadership training with the military today. And so it's the book is funny. There are stories that we tell. Three boys growing up, you know, one brother 13 months older than the other two was the leader. And it was fun to see Steve not only led us, he led the military soldiers that served under him. And it's kind of fun to, once we get it out there, say, well, is it any good? People are buying it, so it must be okay. So we're pretty pleased.
You were in the upstart era where the University of Iowa was dominating. 1980 through 1983 were your years. You won 3 NCAA championships and 4 national team championships. Is that a lot of fun going through that time, that a special time where you're in the finals every year, you win national tournaments? That had to be a blast for you to do that.
It was fun, but it's a situation where this is the first time you experienced it, so you didn't know what you could compare it against. I did win a couple high school state tournaments I won my senior in wrestling. My junior, I took second, but the team won. So I was used to winning. And so, well, yeah, that's what you do. You go, you get a great coach, you get a great team, you win. And so that was my expectation when I went to Iowa and when I was able to accomplish that. Then as I got older and the years started to roll by, I started looking back at that. It's like, oh, that was pretty special, come to think of it.
You've taken a different career path. You were at Iowa State and the academic side, and now you're taking that to help high school students. Fill us in on what you're doing right now, Ed.
Well, as you said, I was assistant wrestling coach at Iowa State, and then I was in student athlete services for 16 years, and then I just retired February 1st, semi-retired February 1st from athletics compliance. There's a niche out there. A lot of high school kids don't understand the NCAA Division I or Division II requirements to be athletically eligible to compete, practice, and receive aid their first year of college. And so what I'm going to do is go through the high school coaches and educate them on how I can my consulting services can help them and help their student athletes make sure after 10th grade, after 11th grade, after 12th grade, they're on track. And then after 12th grade, when they graduate, they're eligible to compete, practice, and receive aid their first year of college.
Dave and Mark Schultz, two guys that you were on the Olympic team with. You competed against Mark Schultz. Tell us what they were like, what it was like being around those guys during the Olympic camp.
Well, Dave and Mark are unique, to say the least. You know, I'm sad to hear, you know, I was sad to hear Dave's passing, and Mark was an incredibly athletically talented and gifted person. His balance, his power. I mean, it was a challenge to wrestle him, and we wrestled six times. I beat him the first four times. He beat me the last two, but the people remember the last two times. And then Dave, I actually wrestled him when I was a freshman at Iowa. During the summer, I was trying out for the junior world team, or I can't remember, it was the 20 and under, and Dave was 20 at the time, and I was 19, and I remember wrestling him, and he beat me the 2 out of 2, and so I didn't make the team. There was some shenanigans there, I won't go into details, but there was I respected him as wrestlers, and heck, I was a 198-pounder in the Olympics, and Dave wanted to wrestle me, a 63-pounder, and we scrapped then. It was fun.
Ed, I'm going to put you in a time machine here. Ed Bannock, Olympic champion, versus Kyle Snyder, Olympic champion. What does that match look like? What would be your approach to that match?
I defer to let Louis wrestle. I was the 98-pounder. Snyder's at 214, so he's closer to 220 than he is to 198, so I'd let Louis wrestle.
How about Jaden Cox? We'll go down to Jaden Cox. He's 189, 202 right now.
Well, I did wrestle Chris Campbell, and Chris and Jaden are very similar, and I was able to beat Chris one time, and he beat me two times, and I was the 80 Olympic trials in Brockport, New York. I'm a Jay Robinson disciple. That's who taught me the A, the B, and the C of wrestling. I'm a Dan Gable disciple when it comes to, you got to put, Mark Mesnick said this quote, most men quit when they begin to tire. Good men go until they think they're going to collapse. But the very best know the mind tires before the body. Therefore, they push themselves further and further beyond all limits. Only when these limits are shattered can the unattainable be reached. Dr. Mark Mesnick wrote that. He was an alternate on the 76th Olympic Greco team. And he was a roommate of mine for 2 years back in college. The thing about that was Gable understood that. And the 3 years that I won, I knew I was going to win nationals. The year that I lost, I didn't know I was going to win nationals because I didn't develop that type of mindset that I had developed the first 2 years and in the fourth year. So Gable, the mesh of the coaching styles, Gable, Robinson, Yagla, and then Mark Johnson fit Iowa back then. And, you know, I think when Robinson left, there was a void. And Dan suffered a little bit for that. And then he got Jimmy Zaleski in there. And then when Jimmy left, there was a void again. So the sport of wrestling now is also due to the regional training centers ballooned, where back when I wrestled, maybe four or five teams legitimately could win the NCAA championship. When you have the top 30 wrestlers in a weight class, the top 10 would be, you know, the 10th ranked guy could upset the number one ranked guy, but not the 30th ranked guy. Now you go to the NCAA tournament, the 30th ranked guy is upsetting the number one guy. I mean, that didn't happen back in my day. But it's interesting to watch the sport of wrestling grow and expand, and more programs are pursuing the regional training centers so they can have steel sharpens steel, so one man sharpens another, the Bible verse. Well, think about it. If high school or college football players were playing or practicing against pro football players on a regular basis, how good would those college football players be? A lot better than the college players are playing on every Saturday. So that's what the Regional Training Center does, is it brings the competition level, brings the wrestling skill level up to world class as opposed to just college class level.
Ed Bannick, the horse, thanks for being on the show with us. Thanks for being at the Dan Gable Celebrity Golf Tournament, and congratulations on the Bannick family receiving the Family Legacy Award. We've appreciated this time.
Thank you, Kyle. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Andy, the stars keep coming. We have Jay Hilgenberg, 5-time All-Pro, 7-time Pro Bowl, part of that legendary 1985 Bears team. But when you got introduced and you had a little chat, you talked about placing second at the state wrestling tournament. You almost felt like, hey, I'm not even worthy to be here given all your credentials. Tell us about your wrestling background, because it was fascinating. You said you would not be the player you were had it been not been for the sport of wrestling.
There's no question I wouldn't have been the football player or had near the career I had in the NFL if it wasn't for wrestling. Mike Ditka always had a saying to us when we were playing, it's not what you achieve in life, it's what you overcome. And when I started my wrestling career in middle school, Southeast Junior High in Iowa City, I was a terrible wrestler. I was a short, fat little kid, and no confidence, got nervous before matches, and I barely won any matches. I remember one match in middle school where I got a forfeit, and the team was celebrating that I was getting a forfeit before the match, and I was counting it as a victory, so that was my one win that year. But then as I grew and got stronger and in the wrestling, I got really good coaching from Clyde Bean from City High School. What wrestling does is it gives you the confidence that in any situation you're in that you can handle it. It teaches you self-discipline. There's just so many great lessons from wrestling. And I'm not even talking what it did for me in football to inside hand control, being an offensive lineman, to get inside position, while playing with leverage, knowing where your body is at. It just ties into so much to football that, I mean, I really believe wrestling should just be a staple that every kid. I mean, it should be like math in school. I just think it's the self-confidence that teaches kids across every phase of life. It's just so beneficial.
You got to be a part of it. A lot of people are fascinated by it. I'm fascinated by it, that 1985 Bears team that you were part of. You were the starting center there. There was a magic to that. There was just some chemistry there. Tell us what that chemistry was, how it formulated, and how you guys got so good with that 15-1 season.
It's confidence. We had a really bad preseason. I don't know if we may have won our last preseason game, but our first few preseason games are really bad. But we had a good year the year before, and it's just we worked so hard at what we did preparing for that 85 season, because the 84 season, we got to the NFC championship game and got beat 23-0 by the 49ers. And, you know, it's just a frustration of getting so close to the Super Bowl and get beat 23-0, thinking that, oh, man, how are we ever going to get back here? But I mean, it's what Mike Ditka said, you know, you put that chip on your shoulder, and we did, and we really came together as a team. That's what it takes, you know. If you can come together as a unit and make that your prime goal, that is your goal to do it. And we did it that year. Unfortunately, we could never get back to it. But the 85 year was definitely just a magical year, and it's something that's, you know, you look back at it. So for so many years, I looked at the 85 season, and all I could was upset about the Dolphins' loss. Now, you know, I don't even care about that anymore. I'm just, you know, it was a great year.
You seem to be really checked into the sport of wrestling. You know about Final X and wanting to go to Lincoln, and you just seem to really have a pulse on the sport. How do you keep in touch with the sport? How do you stay current in the sport of wrestling? What do you do to just kind of keep your passion for the sport alive?
I've gone in and out the last few years, but right now I'm back into the wrestling world, and it's really started, you know, I high school, and then when I went to the University of Iowa, I was a freshman at Iowa, and Randy Lewis was a freshman at Iowa, so I mean I was into the wrestling so much in high school, obviously, but then in college it was huge. But now it's just that there's a lot of information out there, and these wrestlers are just so outstanding now, and the way these guys can compete, and so I definitely look online as much as I can, I read as much as I can about who's out there and what's going on, and it's just the amazing athletes. What I've seen, what these guys can do wrestling now, it's just incredible, and it's such an exciting sport. I just hope that the growth continues, because it's really one of the sports that really needs to be celebrated in this country.
Jay, for those of us that never had the opportunity, what was it like watching wrestling in the old field house? What are your recollections of that in Iowa City?
Right, that was great. I remember it was great. The old field house. I remember the big meet against I don't know if it was Oklahoma State or Oklahoma. They had Dr. Death, the heavyweight, and the Bannock. I remember Lou Bannock. It was just a packed field house. Lou Bannock like just picking this guy up in the air and like throwing him right down the mat and pinning him, and just how crazy and loud it used to get in the old field house. And I was telling Coach Gable a little earlier that I remembered in 72 or 73, I'm not sure what the year may have been, but when Iowa and Michigan wrestled, it was like I think Iowa was number two in the country and Michigan was number one, and this was the big match. And my high school coach, Clyde Bean, was the referee of the match, and he disqualified an Iowa wrestler during the match for, like, swearing or something, and it cost Iowa the meet. And so, I mean, here's my high school coach, you know. And on top of it, the head coach at Iowa at the time was Gary Kirtlemeyer, and Dan was the assistant. And Gary Kirtlemeyer, his son, was my teammate on the high school wrestling team. And I'm sitting there watching the meet with Steve Kirtlemeyer, where our coach, you know, DQs an Iowa guy in the one or two. I mean, it was like, I go, Steve, you're going to go to practice tomorrow? I didn't know what was going to happen.
You were part of the Iowa football program in the late 70s, right around when Hayden Fry came in.
Correct.
Two decades of non-winning seasons prior to that, and the program has been on a pretty good roll ever since.
Right.
What did it take to change the culture of a program that had been downtrodden for so long?
Right. I think, I was there. Bob Cummings was the coach, and Bob Cummings was a former player at Iowa, and I really liked how Bob Cummings, he was a great coach. He taught us how to play with pride and intensity. And when Hayden came to Iowa, though, you could really see just a big shift in a way things were organized and how practices were run. And I think the university made a new commitment to the football program after they hired Hayden Fry. And Hayden had a big vision. Yeah, I think that was the big thing. And they Bump Elliott and Bob Bowlesby allowed him to roll that out, that vision of how to be successful. And Hayden has done a super job. He did a great job at Iowa. It's so fun to see how Kirk Ferentz has picked it up and see really where this Iowa football program's out. It's you know, I go to as many games as I can, and that Kinnick Stadium is ramped up. Like, it's an amazing. I talk to guys nowadays, you know, they're out of the NFL and stuff, and they always talk about, you know, one of their favorite places to ever play is Kinnick Stadium because, you know, those fans are just right on top of you in that stadium. So it's a very memorable place to play.
Appreciate you being our headline celebrity. Great to have you out here. What an honor to have you with great credentials. But just to know that you're really tied to the sport of wrestling and appreciate what the sport of wrestling has done for you, I know that we appreciate that. Thanks for taking the time here on our podcast on the mat.
Well, thank you. I feel a little foolish like being the headline celebrity at a wrestling thing because, you know, I was only a state runner-up when all these national champions are around here. So, but I know this is one place not to pick a fight today. So,
thanks so much. Our final guest, Matt Kroll. We could talk about you playing at the University of Iowa. We could talk about you going to the NFL. But at the Dan Gable Celebrity Golf Tournament, what matters is you are a state wrestling champion. We just had on Jay Hilgenberg talking about how wrestling influenced him in the NFL in his college playing days. How much did wrestling influence you and your ability to play in the NFL?
I think everything. You know, my coach in the NFL level was Coach Rex Ryan, and he had multiple players, and that's who he recruited, or I guess not recruited, at the NFL level. That's what he drafted at the NFL level was ex-wrestlers. I just believe that everything you learn as far as balance, you know, pad level, you know, hip level, hip strength, it all translated to the D-tackle game and his defense. So that's what he honestly looked for. And so definitely helped me being able to transition to that next level. And that's what he looked for. So it always helped.
Was there ever a hard choice to what you were going to stick with? Of course, parlaying that into an NFL career leads to a lucrative side financially. But did you ever miss wrestling thinking that might take you somewhere?
I still miss it to this day. Honestly, I still try and get in a high school wrestling room as much as I can. So it's one of those sports that once you do it, it sticks with you for your life. I don't even really kind of walk around the field of football field, more or less. I have more time in the winter, and I get in the room and roll around just because something that's in your blood, and you always miss it. So, you know, obviously it would have been fun to wrestle at the college level, but with the scholarship situation with football, you know, he's kind of took that path. But I definitely miss it.
You were with the Jets during the Hard Knocks season, weren't you?
I was. That was the first, 2012 or 10, the Jets Hard
Knocks. I think 2010.
Yeah.
What was that like?
It was funny. I mean, because it was Coach Ryan's first year too, right? So, I mean, Coach Ryan's kind of unfiltered, says whatever the heck he wants to say. So it's kind of cool to see, as definitely a player's coach, and to have the world to see that. You know, it was a different deal.
That was the snack season, right? The
snack comment? Snacks. Yeah. That was snacks. That was, let's go get the effing snack. And yeah, it was pretty epic. So it was fun.
We glorify the NFL for good reasons. It's an incredibly hard sport, a lot of combat, very, very precise sport. What's it like being in the trenches, being in the NFL, trying to scrap for a spot on an NFL roster?
I mean, it's a business, you know, first and foremost, but there's some very gifted individuals from athletic size standpoint. You know, me being barely 6'2", if that, you know, struggling to weigh 310. You got guys that are 6'5", that walk around at 310, that can run a 4'6", and can touch this wall that's 10 feet away. You know, their arms are that long, and that's length is such a big thing. So wrestling did so much for me to handle those guys, I guess, to even compete, to even be on the same field as those guys. But that's just to say there's some gifted guys out there that are special humans athletically. So I would paid $1 million to be about 6'4", but that's not what I was with. So but it was fun.
When you were with the Hawkeyes, there were a bunch of guys that were state championship caliber wrestlers, right? Yep. I mean, I think you wrestled Mike Humpel one year in the state tournament.
Yeah, thanks for bringing that up. Yeah, that's why I got third. Yeah, he beat me in the quarters, so I got third place that year. Thanks. Yeah.
Did there ever, were there any living room matches? Were there any backyard matches that took place?
We always joked
days?
About it, right? To get a tournament together because we had Canellis, Alice Canellis, we had Travis Mead, we had Etor Ewen, a Florida State champ. Humpel was there 2-time. We always talked about having, like, just around, like, before practice. I'm sure there was a couple of skirmishes in the, because I lived with Humpel. He's my roommate for a couple of years. So there definitely were some living room, matches, but before we broke any walls or anybody got hurt, we kind of backed off that note. But
you mentioned football being a profession, a business. When it is a business like that, are you focused on the Super Bowl? Is that the end game, or is it more, I'm just focused on my position, I want to do the best job I can in what I'm given task to do?
I think it both comes into play. You have the way the preseason set up, with the offseason set up, you are literally fighting to get to that 53-man. You know, that is your goal, obviously. I mean, that's everyone's, besides the top 10% that are, you know, have a thing signed, they know their spot. There's that lower, say, 50-60% of that roster that literally your goal is to get on 53. And then once that goes, then, yeah, you translate. It's everyone's goal to win the Super Bowl. I think Coach Ryan did one thing before the playoffs. My first year, he said, raise your hand if you want a Super Bowl. And it was like one person out of the 61 guys. You know, it was like LaDainian Tomlinson, maybe one at that point. But it doesn't happen. So, I mean, it's everyone's goal to win Super Bowl. Like I said, just kind of how it translates to the season, your goals change. So,
do you follow wrestling pretty close?
I try to. You know, it was fun to get down to Iowa City, watch those world team trials, our world team event this past, a couple months ago. That was fun to see. You know, you guys do a great job of putting stuff out on the social media stuff. So I try to with stuff, yeah. And I still talk to, you know, Metcalf. We see each other quite a bit through some of the hunting stuff and kind of stay up to date with him. And it's been fun to watch some of those guys go.
Compare and contrast football and wrestling. You did a little bit, but which is harder, which is more demanding, the mental side, just kind of compare and contrast because it's a unique sport.
It's unique. I think D-line is very similar because it's you and that O-lineman, you know, just like a wrestling match. It's you and another guy, and toughness is such a huge thing, and mental fortitude, very similar. But wrestlers, man, people ask me all the time, this question you asked me in the beginning, why don't you wrestle? I'm like, wrestlers got... There's something loose in their head, some of those college wrestlers, man, because you, it's such a physical, intense sport, and you have to be on every time you step on that mat in that practice room, and I have no idea, in the practice room and on the in the mat at the collegiate level, if you're not on the game mentally, you know, you can tell the difference. It's still crazy to me to see, even at the college level, the difference in an athlete who takes, say, his top 5% of that, and a guy who's just a guy wrestling. It's crazy to kind of see that difference, and it's all the mental game. You know, guys are all skilled. But guys that can stick with it day after day, you know, I think wrestling, I'm not going to say by far, but it's just a tougher deal.
Matt Kroll, state wrestling champion who went on to the NFL. Thanks for joining us. This has been fun being at the Dan Gable Celebrity Golf Tournament. For Andy Hamilton, I'm Kyle Klingman. You've been listening to On the Mat.
Is part of the Matt Talk Podcast Network. For more wrestling podcasts, head over to MattTalkOnline.com.